This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com.
Hello and welcome to The Great Indoors,
the podcast which tells you everything you need to know about interiors and how to make it really work for you in your own home.
I'm Kate Watson-Smythe.
And I'm Sophie Robinson. And thanks to Topps Tiles, who've kindly sponsored this podcast. If you're looking for some tile inspiration and the latest interiors trends, be sure to follow their Instagram account, which is at Topps Tiles.
So today we're at my house. Haven't been here for a little while.
Oh, it's quite nice, Kate, to have a roof over my head. I've been camping for the last few days.
I haven't really done tenting since the Lake District in the 1970s. I won't be going back. I know it's all very different now, isn't it?
Oh, I love a little pitter-patter of rain on a bit of canvas as I snuggle under my duck down duvet. I mean, I do glamping, okay? So we have to take my husband's builder's van camping because I literally take mattresses, I take the duck down duvets, we take really, really comfy, massive furniture, beanbags. As in chairs. I don't do those little spindly, rickety camping chairs. I'm not doing any of that. And actually, it has been known that my husband's even taken our four-burner gas barbecue before camping, although we left that behind.
Well, that sounds, yes, if you could be sure about the weather. It's the sanitation.
Oh, really? Oh, you're not one to compost loo?
I like a nice loo and somewhere nice to clean my teeth. And also, I have to have a wee in the night and I am really not up for getting up in the middle of the night and picking my way through the cowpats and the snakes
and the
or whatever else there is there in the guy ropes to find some horrible communal loo at the end of the field or falling in the river and drowning and dying. I mean, I am a slight catastrophist, I will admit, but no, it's not for
me.
So
where have you been then? Because you are glowing. You're looking really well rested and a little bit tanned.
A little bit tanned.
Actually, I know where you've been because I've been following you on Instagram.
I've been in Italy. Yes. So I've been in Italy with a proper roof over my head. And we had a couple of days in Rome, which was amazing. It's lovely, Rome.
What do you like to do in Rome then?
Well, I thought it was going to be really packed and touristy and a bit of a cliche, but actually I was pleasantly surprised. We did a massive walk around all the big sites, sort of 20,000 steps. And I thought the Trevi Fountain would be a bit sort of meh, but actually it's massive and it's really impressive. And it was, I think it was about 34 degrees when we were there, which wasn't the hottest. It's been up to 39. So it was hot, but we did the Spanish Steps and the Trevi Fountain and the Pantheon and around the Colosseum.
So it was a big architectural feast.
Big architectural feast and then a big spaghetti alle vongole feast for lunch. With some very cold white wine, which is always nice.
Oh, well, you earned it by the sounds of things after 20,000 steps.
Yeah, no, Rome is a great Italian city.
Oh, good. So I'd like to say I'm well rested. I think I'm well rested. I've got my hair. In fact, actually, even Kate, the producer, commented on the fact I got my hair in a ponytail today, which is something I don't fashion very often, but I've still got kind of like crazy camping barnet.
Oh, nice.
A anyway, what do we got coming up on the show?
Oh, we've got an action-packed show. But before we get into what we've got coming up, I've been having a little look at the reviews.
What, on Apple Podcasts?
Yes. And, well... We need, listeners, we need to know if you agree with Blanket Chest, who says that Sophie's hysterical laughing gets on my nerves. I think it's harsh, harsh. Or perhaps 33 Claire, who says, most of all, I love how they can laugh. I laugh with them. So, you know, that's...
Polarised opinions.
Well,
my laugh
nothing
is
like
a bit
that.
Marmite, isn't it? I mean, I must admit, Blanket Chest, who gave us a 2 out of 5-star rating due to my laugh. I think she said it really great. I'm kind of with her. I think my laugh is actually quite annoying.
Well, but what we need to say is that now we're going to have a place where we can come and do all this debating.
Yes, a Facebook group we thought would be a good idea, not actually just to debate whether you like my laughter or not, but more to sort of say what you think of the show, what you'd like to hear us talk about, which topics you'd like us to discuss, share your design crimes. We might even do a bit of a style surgery on there. So yes, we're on Facebook under the aptly named The Great Indoors Podcast. So hop
come
on there.
Come and find us.
Like and follow.
And get chatting, and we will be popping in as well to chat and see what's going on.
In the meantime, Kate Taylor will just keep trying to re-edit my laugh, or at least turn the volume down.
Or you can have this suggestion from at Gail Scott Design. If you're feeling a little down, listening to Kate and Sophie will make you feel a million times better, so they provide therapy as well as design advice. We'll take that.
Yeah, we will. Thank you so much, Gail Scott Design. Okay, so moving swiftly on, now coming up today, we are going to be talking about statement walls and floors. We're going to also share with you some fascinating research about happiness. But first, very,
dum, dum, dum.
Very exciting new TV show has just hit the screens here in the UK on BBC Two. We love interior design. We love watching TV, and when the two come together, it's just a win-win,
right? I do love
right?
watching TV, actually.
I do love watching TV.
It's a bit old-fashioned,
yeah,
but I love TV.
So for complete transparency, Kate and I have been given a preview of episodes 1 and 2 to discuss. But by the time you are listening to this podcast, both of those episodes will have gone out. They go out on Wednesdays at 8 o'clock.
On BBC Two.
On BBC Two. And presented very excitingly by Fern Cotton. And then the series judge is Michelle Agundahin, who was the editor-in-chief of Elle Decoration for about 10 years.
Many years, yes.
She knows her onions.
So if you haven't seen it, it is basically a mashup of The Apprentice and Changing Rooms.
Yeah, so the format is very similar to the Great Interior Design Challenge in that it's a competition. We love our competitions, don't
well,
we?
Well, they do see? Like a competition, that bit of jeopardy, don't they?
So
but then it's got teams, so it's The Apprentice.
Yeah.
And I think they've been edited to be quite forthright about each other.
Do you?
On camera.
Well, I must admit, yeah, there's a few of the contestants who would give the judges a run for their money, I think. I think yeah. Frank has some particularly strong opinions about
the one
his fellow.
Too? Yes. Do look out for that if you haven't seen it already.
I think he's Frank. TV gold. He's absolutely brilliant. Doesn't mince his words at all, but very self-confident young man. He's the youngest competitor in the,
yes,
in the
is,
show at just 22.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I think, you know, obviously with the first two episodes, it's still very, very early days. We start off with 10 designers. The difference, again, with programmes that have gone before, that these guys are semi-professional. So they're either practising interior designers or they've recently trained and are going through a career transition. So I think the idea is with the bit of training comes better reveals, if you like, better kind of.
And they've done, I mean, the challenges are different, aren't they? Because they're sort of, the first one was a show home, two show homes. They had to have a room each and make mm-hmm. over. And the second one is a hotel. So there's much more of a commercial aspect, which took me in two directions. I wasn't sure. So talking about the first show, they divide them into two teams, so far, so apprentice. They give them each a room. And it was judged by Matthew Williamson. They've got some quite celebrity judges on there. Oh, and then there's you.
I pop up on episode four. You haven't seen that yet.
So it was interesting for the show home one because I thought there was a very clear difference between the two houses and the reveal of one, I felt I was ticking off the design crimes. Oh, there's a karate chop cushion. There's typography. There's a fairy light. There's an unpainted radiator.
Beach walls.
And then in the other one, I felt was more directional. And we're not going to give any spoilers because people won't necessarily have seen it. But what was interesting when it came to the judging, which I had forgotten about whilst watching the show, was that you have to answer the brief. And in previous shows like GIDC, of course, they've had to answer the homeowner's brief. But the brief for a homeowner as what their taste is and what they would quite like to do in that room is different from the commercial pressures. And in this instance, it was about selling a show home. Mm. And in the second one, where it's a hotel...
Well, the challenge of designing a show home is you've got to appeal to as many people as possible, yeah, which means you need to perhaps water down the design to make it, yeah, appeal to more people.
For the first episode, obviously, they were really keen to showcase their talent and what they can do, but within the confines of a show home. So your first exposure to an audience or to a competition, you're being asked to water down your talents. I felt that perhaps to make that the first one in the series, for me, felt that they weren't being
given
a fair show.
But I think it also sets the precedence that the show, as in, you know, all great design, and Michelle's very, very firm on this, that great design isn't just about establishing your own ego as a designer. It is about being commercial and designing a brief. So I think she set her, you know, her expectations quite clearly from the get-go, that just because you've decorated your house all black and gold doesn't mean you're going to get away with doing that in every round.
No, and it is about people who are semi-professional and presumably are wanting to work with clients,
yeah,
not just do their mate's house.
Yeah.
But I it was interesting because I think that was where I struggled, is to the difference between something that perhaps answered the brief, design crimes and all. And I made a note, actually, there were more than that. There was some gravel around some candles. There was a diagonal throw on a puff. There were orchids. There were tiebacks. There was typography.
You were literally, this is going to make a great Twitter conversation.
You're going to have to join me
and Kate on Twitter on this one. Hashtag design crime and shout out the design crimes as they're seen on Interior Design Masters.
But then you come back to, they are professionals and they're answering a brief. So you have to bear that in mind.
And then what did you think of episode 2, which will have gone out the night before this podcast comes out? By the way, everyone can watch this on iPlayer, and I've been told the programme will stay on iPlayer for a year.
Yeah.
So there's plenty of time to catch up on
this
show.
We're not spoiling anything. So in the second episode, the 10 have become 9.
Yes.
And they had to do a hotel room.
In a chocolate theme? I could just see your toes curling.
In a chocolate-themed hotel. Well, it was interesting because I just spent most of that show going, God, that's difficult.
Yes. I would obviously go straight for the Quality Street tin, obviously, wouldn't I?
Oh, clever.
And it would be a rainbow of psychedelic sweet wrappers. That would be my thing. And nobody really did that. Everybody did go quite chocolate-coloured.
They did, but despite being told not to.
Ignored it altogether. There was one contestant who quite fabulously shirked the whole chocolate theme and then just put a vintage chocolate tin on the dressing table.
Yes, and again, that was with the brief, because there was one room which, when I saw it, I liked it, and then it was pointed out that for a hotel, it was completely impractical.
Well, there you go again.
So that also was interesting. So I think all the way through, I'm struggling with the idea of what I like and what is going to answer the brief. And it will be very interesting to see how that develops.
But ultimately, you know, the prize at the end of this programme is to win a contract to design a hotel. So by the end of this process, they're going to need to have shown that they've got lots of skills. Yes, they're fabulous designers. They can create spaces that people want to be in, but also that they're hugely practical, can run on budget. I mean, it's a big ask being an interior designer, and winning a contract like that requires a lot of skill and dedication. So they're going to have to sift the wheat from the chaff throughout this process for sure.
Yes.
But I think for me, you know, watching it, obviously I'm thrilled to be back, and it's good to see things mixed up. I quite enjoying the guest judges and the different opinions. I think that's quite interesting. But 10 reveals in the first episode, I felt like I was watching Fast and Furious. It was kind of...
Yes, it's a lot to look at,
really,
isn't it? And
is...
I felt also that the judging process in those two early episodes was quite curtailed. I felt I wanted to hear a bit more about that. And I suppose because they've got so many rooms to show, you didn't get that much of a conversation. And perhaps as it goes on and they have fewer contestants, there will be a bit more interrogation of
I agree. See, I'm looking forward to it whittling down, because at the moment you're not really understanding any of the designers' designs in any depth. So yeah, I think it's a show that will get better as it goes on. But I'm quite enjoying sort of being introduced to all the designers at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
You got any favourites? Have you got anybody who you're kind of like, any designers that you feel
I've
like you're going to champion?
I've got my eye on one or two.
Have you? Go on. Who have you got your eye on?
Tell
you. Go on.
No, you tell me who the winner is.
Ah, I know. I got inside intel. You're going to have to seriously
I'm going to tickle
bribe
you.
Me. More than pizza for lunch, Kate, quite frankly, if you're going to want to know that kind of information.
Oh, but then we were already laying negotiating terms on the table. Right, it was wine and pizza and cake.
Oh, now you're talking.
And then I'll just tickle you. But no, I think it's good to have interiors back on the telly.
Yeah.
I mean, years ago, I remember interviewing Jamie Lester, who actually came third in one episode of The Apprentice. I can't remember which one it was. He said, you've got to remember three things. They're making a television show.
Mm.
Two, they're making a television show. Three, they're making a television show. And that really put it in, you know, and you realise that. So I do look at Frank, who is being very frank and forthright with his opinions two episodes in. But equally, I'm sure he's been edited
to be the TV goals that he is. Yeah, and I think also that's a really valid point, in so much as I know from my experience on the Great Interior Design Challenge that a lot of the interior design fraternity got very upset, saying this isn't a true representation of interior design. I don't think Interior Design Masters is going to be a true representation of interior design either. So I think, again, what you've got to understand is this is an entertainment show, folks, not an open university into how to be an interior designer.
Exactly. And it is entertaining and it's fun, and I will be tuning in.
And join us on Twitter.
Yes.
Lots of chat.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNADS.com.
Still to come, how to make a statement with your walls and floors, and also ceilings, perhaps. And of course, those design crimes. But first, Sophie, how's your mood with your camping hair? Wall-to-wall happiness?
Yeah, so we're going to talk about home happiness, because it's something that I've been talking about quite a lot, funnily enough, over the last couple of months. Some research came out in June, some really in-depth, cohesive, coherent research from the Happiness Institute, no less. Did you know there was such a thing as the Happiness Institute?
No, I missed that.
Yeah, based in Copenhagen.
Of course they
are.
It's
their job.
Happiest nation in the world.
Well, quite. And they were commissioned by Kingfisher, who are obviously a really big brand who own B&Q, to look into home happiness and do some like proper research. It's sort of something that I think I've always been interested in talking about anyway, but I've just come hot off Fern Cotton's Happy Place Festival.
Mm-hmm.
She's just launched her own festival, kind of spinning off from her podcast, I suppose. If anybody hasn't listened to Fern Cotton's podcast, Happy Place, absolutely brilliant. But Fern is very interested in mental well-being, mental health, and she talks to really interesting people on her podcast about happiness. And when she hosted her own festival, I kind of said, well, I need to be there talking about happiness in the home, because it is so important to our overall well-being, as this research.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because when I saw it, I thought, oh, happiness report. And I thought,
well, when you
it?
Saw the press release.
Yes, I thought, oh, isn't it obvious that we need to be happy in our homes?
Such a journal.
I just thought it's a new buzzword, isn't it? Like, we're all styling our homes now instead of just putting things on shelves. But then I did read it.
I did.
And would you like some stats? Because it was quite a big survey.
I thought you'd love it. It's got loads of stats.
Where's my jingle?
In it.
So jingle, 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 jingle. They asked just under 13,500 people.
Across Europe.
In 10 countries.
Yeah.
44 questions.
Oh.
That's quite a big ask, isn't it? I mean, you get the person that knocks on the door and says, can I just ask you two or three questions for an opinion poll? And you're like, no, mate, I haven't got time. 44 questions. That's a commitment. So that I thought was interesting. And then I have got another statistic, which I can't read. There you go. 73% of people who are happy in their homes are happy in their lives.
Yeah, it's big. It's really big. And I think when you look at the happiness pie chart cut up like a piece of cake, the biggest chunk towards your well-being and happiness is your mental health, your mental well-being, 17%. The second wedge at 15%, so hot on the heels, is home happiness.
Yeah.
Number
which
two.
Which was more than earnings or your job, which I found fascinating.
More than your physical well-being. Yeah. More than what you earn, more than what your job, and more than your civil status.
I thought the job thing was interesting because I do think in this country we do very much define ourselves by what our jobs are. You know, when you're introduced to someone new, one of the first things you say is, what do you do?
Yeah.
So I thought it was very interesting that your happiness at home came above your job.
Mike Viking, can I just say, brilliant name. Isn't it? Who's the big man at the Happiness Institute? He sort of said what has been so interesting is it's revealed that a lot of people are looking for happiness in the wrong places. And happiness is essentially on our front doorstep. It's right here. And I think for people like you and I who are passionate about interior design in our homes, and I'm guessing anybody listening to this podcast is pretty engaged, that's good news, folks.
Yeah.
It's okay to want to do DIY, to want to decorate, to want to create more of a sense of space, to want to feel like your home is somewhere that really grounds you and helps you relax.
There were two things that really stood out for me. And one was that bigger is not better,
yes,
which I thought was so interesting. It's about whether our home feels spacious is three times more important than its actual size, which I thought that was fascinating because everybody always wants more space.
All the people who feel like they need to move house because they need more space, or people who are borrowing more money to do an extension or a loft conversion or whatever. And actually, it's the sense of space that's more important.
Yes.
And that's all down to great interior design, isn't it? I don't know what your other big headline was, but one for me was this concept of renting.
Whether you own or rent your home has little impact on your happiness. I thought that was A, fascinating, but B, brilliant and so encouraging because people do rent.
The country
now
that actually rated first in Europe for home happiness was in fact Germany, and 50% of Germans rent their homes.
Yes, and I think in France or in Paris, a lot of people...
The Europeans do it a lot more. I mean, I think one of the... So there were five elements that the Happiness Institute identified that went towards home happiness. First of which was pride. 44% of your home happiness comes from a feeling of being really proud about where you live, which that's massive. That's almost half.
So is that proud about where you live or proud about what you've done to your house?
I think it's just all of it. I think it's just feeling. I think on one level, you could have a feeling of pride in that you've saved up and accomplished your dream home or moved into a neighbourhood. You know, if you're a DIYer or a home renovator, that could give you pride.
Okay.
So I think pride is a separate personal value system.
Feeling happy that you've made the best of your house or you've cleaned
it.
And
it's how you want it.
And you feel comfortable there.
Yeah.
Oh, and actually that's the second point, comfort.
Yeah, so comfort, I think, is really connected with that. So comfort's obviously, I mean, I just think of the literal, like, oh, I've got a really comfy sofa and a nice firm bed. But actually comfort can also be that feeling of coming home from work, shutting the front door and just feeling like you've got your space to retreat and feel relaxed in. Which I think is also then linked to these other two sort of pillars of happiness, which are safety and control. Now, I think where we live in the world, we're really lucky that we've all, you know, most of us got roofs over our heads and that we have a feeling of safety. But I think this is where it pulls into maybe something that's poignant for us in Britain is a feeling of control. Now, you know, one of my biggest anxieties is the fact I've got a massive mortgage and I have to work really hard to pay for it. And sometimes that feels a little out of control, or the amount of renovation and DIY that needs doing in my house can make me feel like I'm losing control. I know for a lot of people who rent in this country, due to our particular renting regulations, people don't feel in control. And perhaps in Europe, where they've got a lot of happy renters, that's something that's still being worked on.
They have much more long-term renting, don't they? I mean, it's years since I've lived in Paris, like 30 years, but I do remember there you rented a place and the expectation was you would be in it for sort of as long as you wanted to be in it, but also that you could absolutely paint it. It was your home. You did what you wanted to it. And as long as you put it back to a reasonable state at the end, then that was fine. And in this country, it's not like that anymore, is it? And people get kicked out with short notice or...
Oh, you wait to get a mortgage, it's a nightmare.
There is,
especially with the Brexit coming. Like, what are we?
We're not mentioning that word.
We're not mentioning the B word.
But shall I tell you the other fact I liked?
Yeah, go on.
This is for me. This is not for you. Home happiness increases after the age of 50.
Oh, yes, I noticed that.
I thought that was interesting. And it's saying, I mean, when you take it apart, it's quite logical, isn't it? It's because most people by that stage would like to feel they're in their forever home and they're settled.
Right, so that's a feeling of security.
So their home improvements increase. So that comes back to
security.
You've
probably paid off a bit of the mortgage by then, one would hope, perhaps.
Yeah. Oh, I don't know.
I know we're dancing all over this research, but we'll put it on our blogs and you can have a good deep dive into it. But another one of the five sort of pillars of happiness was this idea of identity, which I was particularly interested in. And that's your home being a reflection of who you are and your own personality. What for me was really nice is I've always been saying, and I know so have you, that people need to really explore who they are and reflect their own personal taste and style in their interior, and don't be a slave to trends and don't copy what the neighbours are doing. Be brave, be your own person. And now I feel like this research has kind of like backed that up.
Do you feel vindicated?
I feel totally vindicated.
Nothing like a good feeling of vindication.
And also it's just really, you know, if I want to put some of these stats under the husband's nose as well and say, look, you know, it's not all just like...
Fluffy cushions, frou-frou
money that we're just whittling on the house. This is all really important
well-being
stuff,
yes.
Man. Yeah.
It's practically a medical thing, isn't
it? So do you want to just to round this topic up, do you want to hear of the five ways to home happiness?
Go on then.
So number one, as you've already said, rearrange what you've already got. It's all about a sense of space rather than actual space. So bigger houses don't make bigger happiness.
Yes.
Number two.
It might make me happy.
Do some DIY and decoration. Updo your home. That sense of achievement and sense of pride of having fixed up your home is a great fast track to happiness. Number three, invite people over. Creating a home. She raises the eyebrows. Look at that.
Oh, I was just thinking. Oh, cooking. I didn't mean to raise my eyebrows.
You so did.
Like,
oh, I won't be doing that.
You're here, aren't you? I'm about to make you lunch. I'm about to make you lunch and now you're like, oh, I can't have any gluten, sugar, alcohol, dairy. So you're having lettuce. How happy are you going to feel? I'm going to feel really happy because I get a whole pizza.
Number four is that connection to nature. So
biophilia,
we've talked about that. But that, you know, bring in some plants into your home, open up the windows onto your garden. And then finally, get your identity stamped on your pad. Use it as a place to feel creative and express who you really are. So, Kate, does a statement wall make you happy?
What are we calling a statement wall? I mean, is this just a posh way of feature wall?
Because she's got me rumbled already.
I know you now.
Well, no, I'm opening it up to feature floors, feature walls, feature ceilings. What I'm sort of seeing a lot in interior design is really, really bold statement pattern, almost dominating the room. Traditionally, people might think, oh, I'm just going to do really neutral oak floor and maybe just like
I think we're over neutral
here, and then I'll pop the interest in other ways. What we're seeing now is a much bigger commitment because, you know, doing a floor in a bold pattern, be it a fitted carpet or a tile, is, you know, that's quite an investment.
You're right. I think we've got much more confident in our colour, in our use of colour. We've become much braver. And I think there is a move now towards making more of a statement with our homes. And maybe that plays back into what we were just talking about. It's the happiness because you've taken ownership of the space, not necessarily because you've got a mortgage, but you know, you've decided to stamp your personality on a space. So that makes you feel in control. That makes you take pride in it because you've done what you wanted to do. I mean, I'm all for a bold statement.
Yeah, and maybe like you say, it's because we are planning on staying on homes in our homes perhaps longer than we were 10 years ago when people were thinking more about moving and flipping property and one thing and another. I mean, I'm all for it, obviously. I mean, you know, this is my hymn sheet totally, because I think once you've discovered a style that you like, really going for it really does give you a boost rather than just going for the safe option.
I never would advise going for the safe option because I think you always regret it.
Always feel disappointed.
But it's difficult when it's a commitment, and actually, you know, tiled floors. I love pattern tiles.
We're seeing a lot of them, aren't we?
We are seeing a lot of them.
This is a particularly strong trend in kitchens, bathrooms, hallways.
I think they're great, but for some reason, I find it hard to visualise pattern tiles on floors. For some reason, I don't know why, and I can do it with rugs. But there are visualiser things, aren't there now? And I think Tops have one.
Tops do have a brilliant one on their website, a visualiser, where you can find a room that looks similar to your room. So I think there's like a choice of like 6 or 7 different rooms or whatever. And obviously you've got to pick their tiles, but they've got so many to choose from, and you can just drop in a pattern tile.
And you can do a splashback or part of a wall or part of the floor. So that gives you an idea. I mean, it may not look exactly like your kitchen, but actually it's the same when you're choosing wallpaper. You're often on these websites, you get one tile to look at or a small piece of wallpaper. And actually just being able to see an expanse of that tile gives you a sense of what it would look like, even if it's not your kitchen. Another tip they've given, which I think actually is a really good tip, is you can have a plain tile, maybe in a strong colour, but it's about how you lay it. And we've seen a lot more of that recently with the, you know, the classic oblong metro tile or subway tile.
Oh, that was sort of traditionally done in like a brick.
It was always in a brick. And now we're seeing them in verticals, in herringbones, or maybe even in different colours and stripes. So you can create
Maybe with a jaunty coloured grout.
A jaunty grout. Maybe are we still doing jaunty grout?
Maybe like a pale pink tile with a yellow grout. How about that? Lovely.
I've gone silent again. I'm just thinking it through.
I think the coloured, I mean, you know, if we're worried about big, bold pattern tiles, as I love to do, is perhaps a bit too much of a commitment. What you're saying is you don't need to spend that much money. You can buy a more affordable plain tile and still be experimental and creative
with the way you lay it.
Would you use a coloured grout?
Well, no, because we had the marital veto on the gold grout.
Oh, yes.
Yes, doesn't happen very often. So maybe I would use gold grout.
Does a gold grout really look, though? Does it just look shiny brown?
Well, you said that about my ceiling, and those words were eaten. My ceiling does not look like shiny brown.
Need some glitter dust in it or something.
I think it probably has got glitter dust in it. And in fact, I saw something. Oh, I love that programme. It's always on Channel 4, Escape to the Chateau.
And she did
a black bathroom, lovely angel. Yeah. And she was putting glitter in her grout, not a euphemism.
She was adding her own glitter to the grout.
She was. So I think that's fine. But there was a house, because I do on the blog on Fridays, you know, the best houses for sale. And there was one a while ago by the woman who owns the darkroom, brilliant ceramics. And she had a house where she'd got lots of square tiles, also very fashionable shape, square tiles.
Oh, yes, we're going for square rather than metro now.
Square rather than metro.
Design report.
Black tiles with a white grout and white tiles with a black grout. And I've also seen white tiles with a yellow grout, which... Yeah. I can't do yellow and white for me. It makes me think of scrambled egg. But other than that, I would do white tiles with a cobalt blue grout.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah, you can do that in your house.
Yeah.
I'll give you that, shall I? Do you want any colour advice, Sophie? Because I'm all over it. Because have you finished your downstairs loo yet? Because if you haven't, you could do the top half in white tiles with blue grout to match the blue tiles on the bottom
half.
You're
too late.
Have you done it?
It's been done. No, it is done in the most fabulous cobalt blue tile. Actually, they're from Tops. my tiles, and they're square as well. Oh, double tick.
Oh, she's all over it.
But I've done them up to sort of picture rail height in my tiny, tiny little closet toilet.
Yes, but then it was the top
half. But I'm going to wallpaper the ceiling. But
you've been saying that for a year.
This is how I roll, Kate. This is how I roll.
So you're going to have a statement ceiling?
Yes. Well, I've got a statement floor. So I've got my lovely coloured floor tiles on the bottom, then this deep, lovely cobalt blue wraparound tiles, and then a statement ceiling as well.
So
because
I've
never stopped with one.
Yes, this is my question to you, Sophie Robinson Interiors.
Yes.
Is there anything in your house which is not a statement?
The only room, that's a really good question because
The one you haven't done.
The only room that isn't really a statement is my office, which is uncharacteristically white and plain.
Is that because you've got to share it with your husband?
No, it's not. It's because I kind of wanted somewhere where it could just be quiet.
She's understanding the rest of us. We need a quiet space.
But, you know, it's not going to stay like that for long.
No, I didn't think so.
It isn't, is it?
What are you going to do?
I'm getting some green vibes. Well, I've got really low ceilings in my
house. Paint it green and then it will connect with the garden outside and leave the walls white.
I think I'm having a green thing.
I love green.
Next time you come around, there might be a green ceiling. I don't know. We'll play around. We'll think. But I think that is what we're saying, is be playful and don't just think that floors need to be brown oak and ceilings need to be white. And if you're going to do a feature wall, it's just one wall of pattern. Yeah. It's opening up the fact that you can make a statement on any surface. Yeah. In your home.
It's definitely coming back and I'm all for it.
So, Kate, my favourite part of the show.
She says, swishing her camping ponytail.
Let's have a little bit of design crimeage, shall we? You spotted any lately?
Well, I mean, we're holiday, aren't we?
We're in
the holiday season. So I think, and I've done it, you know, where you...
Oh, good, I'm going to like this one.
Well, where you buy that thing on holiday because it works and then you bring it back and it doesn't. And I've done it, particularly I've done it with clothes, you know, where floating around that gorgeous little market and you buy that tie-dye caftan and you float around to the beach to it and you think it looks lovely and then, you know, not so much in the co-op 3 days later on a Tuesday afternoon. And I've done it a lot with clothes, less with house stuff, but, you know, buying things that fit.
What, like romantically, because it just looks so great in that
environment.
Sun or whatever.
Yes, exactly. And then you bring it back and it doesn't work in your house. And that's not to say you shouldn't have a souvenir, but I think you've got to be very careful because they can turn into a design crime once they're back home.
God.
She's looking at me crossly.
My house is full of my... booty that I've got from my travels.
Well, what have you got?
Well, more recently, a rug from Morocco.
Well, that, yes. And that's one rug on your landing, which matches very well with your wall.
Yes, it was a considered choice.
No, I totally will allow you that one. But I'm rubbing my hands to know what else you've got that I haven't spotted.
Oh, my God. I mean, I've done quite a lot of travelling in India and been completely kind of like taken over with how wonderful and colourful and handcrafted and cheap everything is over there.
Mm.
And maybe brought back one too many.
What have you got though? I can't think of things in your
house. I've got a lot of mirrors, a lot of antique metal, you know, that sort of punch metal.
Oh, yes, that's a bit.
Got quite a lot of that. But there's some great, you know, like, you know, wonderful artisan handmade things that you can buy in places like Africa, India, Asia, noodle bowls, ceramics,
textiles. I think just don't buy everything or
don't theme it. Don't come back and do a Moroccan themed bedroom.
That's
like a rug
exactly
on the landing's allowed.
What it is. It's the
but you
theming.
Can't do the bed, throw the cushions, the rugs.
And
the
just
wall
think
hanging.
Very carefully, as we say about everything. Don't think about that object in isolation. You have to think about how it fits within the rest of the room or the space. And if it works, then by all means,
allowed.
Go for it. Yes. It's like clothes shopping, isn't it? You shouldn't buy one piece of clothing in isolation. Not even a tie-dye caftan to wear to Waitrose. So, if you've encountered any culturally specific or travel-related design crimes, let us know. And if you do listen to us in a far-flung country, some miles from where we are recording here in deepest, darkest, rain-soaked England, do get in touch and tell us where you are. And also tell us if you've brought anything travelling to this country that you've taken home that perhaps feels very out of place. If you've got lots of little red telephone boxes or statues of London taxis, we'd love to hear from you. I'm Mad About the House on Instagram, and Sophie is Sophie Robinson Interiors, and our blogs, sophierobinson.co.uk and madaboutthehouse.com.
And our Facebook group, The Great Indoors Podcast.
There we go.
So in short summary of today's episode, first up, we talked about the new interior design show, Interior Design Masters, currently on BBC Two. And while it's a familiar format, we're already gripped. So do tune in. Second of all, we talked about home happiness. And I think the big takeaway here is big isn't always best. And it's more about...
It's not what you've got. It's not how big it is. It's what you do with it. For now.
And finally, statement walls and floors. And in short, Kate and I think you should absolutely go for it.
Neutral's dead.
Yeah.
Bold is back.
As ever, everything we talked about, plus some useful pictures and links, will be on our blogs. And do please rate and review us on your podcast app, if you can. And as you already know, we do read them all. And we do take them to heart.
Don't worry about your laugh. We love your laugh, Sophie. Thank you so much to Topps Tiles for sponsoring this podcast, to Kate Taylor, our producer, and of course to you for listening.
And we'll see you in the great indoors. Right. Smiley happy people.
Smiley happy people. I don't know what we're...